I'm Amber Williams here at William H. Turner Technical Art School, here with Mr. Gross. Can you please say your name and spell it?
My name is Oliver Gross, OliverGrossS, Gross.
Thank you for coming out here to share your story with us. I want to ask you, when were you born and where?
I was born in Renz, Georgia, August 31st, 1930.
When did you come down to Miami?
My first visit to Miami to live here was 1943. But my mother and father, we had visited Perrine in 1938. We lived there for about a couple months. My daddy was employed someplace else. We were the Roy Richardson Construction Company that went over the country. When I say country, Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, Georgia, putting up power lines. There was not always electrical. People don't always had electricity. People had lamps. So when you come about putting up this power line, where people begin to put power into their homes where they had bulbs and stuff, there was no such thing during my time, the early years. You had lamps, kerosene lamps with wicks. You didn't have no refrigeration. Stoves of wooden stoves, burning wood in it. And you put ice in the ice box. Had a container that was sealed that you put ice in it, and it would make that little box cold to hold whatever you had, the leftover food. And during that time, people would cook food and put it in jars and save it. They cook it and put it in jars and put rubber bands on it and tighten it. And you could keep it for 6 months, sometime for a whole year, you know. And they had my father, and we lived on a farm. We had a smokehouse. And the smokehouse had all the meats there, all the beef and all the pork and packed in all this salt, you know. But the smokehouse, and they had chickens, and we gathered eggs and had cows. We milked cows and got the milk. He said we didn't get no milk delivered to us. We had to go from the farm to the city on a Saturday. And it's a wonderful thing about that. I remember it quite often. We go to the gin mill where we pick the cotton. I pick cotton a lot, pick a lot of cotton, go to the gin and cultivate it, take the seeds out of it, and you get paid for it. And we lived in a little town called Stapleton, and we would go to Renz. Now, in Renz, there was two sections there, one for white and one for blacks. You couldn't walk on the sidewalk and go in the front door. You had to come in through the back door to go into the store. But you could go out the front door, but you couldn't come in the front door. The law was you could not go in the front door. You could come out the front door, but you were not permitted to go in the front door. You had to, and they had in the back, they had a little restaurant, a little pool hall, and all that little stuff back there. And go into those grocery stores and buy the dresses or buy some shoes or, you know, whatever you had to buy and get some grocery clothes. Practically everything you needed was on the farm. That's a situation where your life was controlled to a point. You see, there was control to a point where you do's and do nots, do and do not do, could not do. You couldn't do those kinds of things. It was just one of the situations during that time. You had the police, and they, to some degree, I guess they was tough, but they didn't have a whole lot of rest because you didn't put yourself in a position where you got arrested. And then, like I told a young man, that when my dad had talked back to this white lady, we were sharecropping, and said unspoken law was that you couldn't do those kinds of things. My daddy did it. And doing so, we got chased out of Georgia. The Ku Klux Klan came to my daddy's house at night, maybe 2 o'clock in the morning, and gonna call him out. They was out there with shotguns and everything else. And my mother and I went out the house through the thickets and pine trees and to a little town called Renz where my grandmother lived. And I didn't see my daddy for about 3 or 4 years. I didn't have no idea, no way he were. He was sent a letter. Let me explain this to you. He was sent a letter. And they were saying it was something like a ciphering. He would write as much as he could and skip two or three lines and start something else. And what you had to remember was what it is that he's trying to tell me. Ciphering, you in between, read between lines. That's where that expression comes, read between lines. I said, my name is Oliver Gross, and I live in this town of Fayetteville, let's say. Got a job working, got a place to stay. Carver High School. During that time, they had three high schools, Carver High Schools, Booker T. Washington, and Dorsey, for blacks, or for colors. Let's say for colors, that's what it was, for colors, blacks. There was three white high schools, Mama Edison, Mama Jackson, and Mama High, for whites. They had their schools, we had ours. Over time, they had Dunbar Elementary and Phyllis Wheatley. At my school, it was 1 through 12. You started in the first grade, and you were there for 12 years before you finished. 12 years, I said. 12 years. I ain't talking about 13, 14 years. 12 years. You finished. See, because you knew you had to be to school. You knew you had to get your lesson. They had playgrounds, park. We had to park there, and we didn't have no gym. We had no showers. You couldn't shower up. Like 90 kids shower up and change clothes, and didn't have that. Didn't have that. There was no air conditioning. There was no air conditioning in the room. You had to high the windows up, and whatever wind that blew in the windows to keep you a little cool, that kept you cool. And you pull the windows down in the winter, because when it got cold, sometimes it got cold here, and during that time of night, it doesn't get as cold. But I went to school at Carver High School, and I finished in June 1951. Well, they had a place we used to go all the time. They just give names for it. It was a nasty man, but it had a beautiful restaurant where they had all the meat and stuff hanging in the window. Had the sauces and the baked chickens and all that and the pork chops. And now they had the stew beef and the rice and the chitlins and the boiled fish and grits. I mean, you know, you stand there and just marvel at all this food that was there. You know, and your mom said, come on in, boy. You go in there and you get your meal, sit down and eat and stuff. And then and Sir John Hotels, and they had the Mary Elizabeth. Mary Elizabeth was a magnificent place, beautiful hotel. I mean, it had Dolmans, and they had shoeshine shops and all this kind of thing. It's how nice, and people were paying the rates to go in and stay. People come from all over the country to stay, and all the big entertainers, Dinah Washington, Cap Calloway, you know, Lester Young, and Parker, and Cap Calloway, Duke Ellington, Sam Jones, that's where they stayed. See, because they couldn't live on Miami Beach. Couldn't live on Miami Beach. They entertained on Miami Beach, but they couldn't live in the hotels on Miami Beach during that time. They had to come over town, downtown, and live in the Mary Elizabeth or Carver Hotel. That's where they had to live. Now, where the police department is now and the post office area, there was a Lord Cavett Hotel there. That nice hotel, and in the building, the open lot in back of Greater Bethel Town, there on 9th Street was the Carver Hotel, and then it had a nip bottle place that we had the sodas and all that kind of thing. You know, and they had everything in Miami. Had restaurants, they had the churches, had the nightclubs, they had centers, places where young people could entertain themselves, the halls, and they would have. The schools are different now than they were then. You on a Saturday morning, they would have sock hops. You know, kids would go back to school and they would dance. On Friday afternoon, they had amateur hour for the boys, and the glee club was singing, the girl was singing, they have a dancing country. Of course, see, a lot of boys couldn't dance. They didn't know how to dance. They still don't know how to dance, you know, but I'm saying. And some of the girls don't know how to dance too, but it was energetic. It kept you going. They had a lot of things for teens. But see, like now they don't have a lot of things for kids now to do. You get out of school, what are you gonna go? You get out of school at 3 o'clock, you go home, you watch TV, or you get your lesson, there's nothing else. See? They had four theaters over town. Four. They had one in Coconut Grove, they had one in Liberty City, the Liberty Theater on 15th Avenue. The Cotton Club was also on 15th Avenue, a big nightclub where they entertainment. They had the pool there on 71st Street, and had a swimming pool that had entertainment, and by over there by Liberty City Elementary there. They had all these nice things, all the nice places you could go in to have fun and enjoy yourself. Four theaters. There's no theaters now for kids. The one on Biscayne Boulevard is gone. They done closed one down over there in the Avenue Mall. They had one on 60th Street in Liberty City. See, you, and they entertained. They danced and had brought the entertainers there. They performed. And they would have big dances. And it was nice. But see, all that's gone now. All the theaters over time are gone. They don't have them. They had four theaters over time. So we always had some place to go. Always had something to do. Had the libraries and everything. Sure, they had the football teams. We played, black teams played black teams. We didn't play white teams.
Did you ever visit the Dixie Stadium at Dorsey Park?
Dorsey Park.
Yeah, did you ever attend like a football game there?
Yeah, I played there. I played there when I was in high school. That's what all the football games were played in Dorsey Park. Carver High School played their games there. Booker T. Washington played their games there. And Dorsey High played their games there. They, whoever they came to play them, played there. We had a couple of games at Coconut Grove on the Coconut Grove Park, but basically that was the stadium or the place, the park where football games was played. Big high wall. Police was always in presence there, you know, keep the kids from jumping on the wall, because some kids want to jump on the wall, you know, but Mr. McGrudy and all this boy was there. You didn't get on the wall because you knew you was in trouble if you climbed that wall. You know what I mean? So you paid your little bit of money. If it was 25 cents or 15 cents or whatever. See, long and then money wasn't like what it was. Gas price of gas was cheap, food was cheap, and you live in an area where you couldn't live in any other place you want to live. Like the young lady asked me earlier about Miami Beach. I know in time when people work on Miami Beach, you had to have a pass. Identified pass with your picture on it, picture ID, to go and work on Miami Beach. And you had to leave a certain time. You couldn't stay over there all night long. There was nothing for you to do. There was no place for you really to go for entertainment. But see, now they go to these hotels. You got people working at hotels. And there was a lot of jobs one time that a lot of blacks didn't take advantage of. Mr. Athlete Range had worked out a deal with the union where they were going to have the black work in the hotels, be chambermaids to change the linen, and buff the floors, and all the kind of thing what they do in a hotel. They didn't want to do it. You know what happened? They got some Cubans. That's why it's one of the biggest labor unions over on Miami Beach now. One time here in the bus system, the transit system, which was on 8th Street, down there 7th Avenue. Then it came out here to 54th Street where the Caleb Center, and it had black bus drivers. The president of the union was black. But like a lot of times when there's a gruesome agreement when you're the president now and you don't want him to be the president and another person who desires to be it, he'll get more votes than the two of you will get and he becomes the president. See, that's why we as people, we're going to have to learn to work together. We're never going to get any place if we don't work together for one another. There's nobody going to help us like we can help ourselves. What I do for you or what you do for some other young person, it's good. You understand what I'm saying? You got to stay in school. It's important that you stay in school. Not only for you. It's important for you. It doesn't have anything to do with anybody else. It's for you. You get an education for you. You don't get one for me. You don't get one for your parents. You don't get one for your grandparents, your great-grandparents. High intelligent that you are, that's what matters. How much education you got, it's going to serve you. And in turn, you can take it and help someone else. See, because you don't have an education, you can't help nobody else. You can't even help yourself. You can't read and write for yourself. You can't teach somebody else to read and write. So you got to want to come to school. You got to want to be a part of the school system. It's important that you do this. I'd worked 25 years for Pan American in New York, and here in Miami in New York City. I retired and I came here and I worked 10 years over the Ag Technology Center that Mr. Collison, Mr. Part, and Mr. Miller knows on the other side. And I retired here in 1998. And every year, like I said, I go back down to Youth Fair and I bid and I get a couple of pigs. I always get a couple of pigs for the kids that's over there. So they all know me when Mr. Grove shows up. You know, like here, there are a lot of the teachers. I know all the teachers was here. And I was here when it was Mamre Agriculture School, not here on the other side. When they built this school, this plant here, and named it the William Turner Tech, Dr. John McKinney was the principal. And when they first built this school, it was going to be for boys only. But Dr. McKinney and Bill Turner and those, they said, you know, make it a co-ed where it be boys and girls. And doing so, it's a wonderful school. I think they're doing real good. Maybe not as good as they could do, but they're doing well. We have a good principal here. I've known him for a long time. I know a lot of the teachers. And the school itself is never going to get any better than the students. The students make a good school because you get good grades and you are able to. And there's a lot of money here, a lot of scholarship money here. Okay?
Thank you for coming out here and sharing your experiences with us. We appreciate
it. Thank you. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. It's always nice to meet some nice young ladies and young men, especially someone who lives in Bunch Park. Well, I guess that's it. I'm